Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Gents, can we just have some reasonable behaviour and can we please just start the podcast?
You have no authority here, Phil Logan. No authority!
Read the standing orders, Phil. Read them and understand them. Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're here, well, two of us are here in the rugby dungeon. I'm Tim, that's JB.
Hello, Tim.
In dressing gown and New York Jets pajama trousers tonight.
Do you want a story about these pajama trousers?
Yeah, go on.
I picked them up in New York on the flight back to Manchester after the... Is it the Philly game?
Yeah, we were doing... Saracens, Newcastle in Philly.
Yeah, and this is my travelling home garb. Literally what you see today.
Wow. See, I'm a New York Jets fan, so I'm coveting those quite a lot. What, and for my sins as well. Down the line is Phil.
Hello. Hello, Tim Cocker. Hello, JB.
Still currently without baby number two, but with a semi-Randrandra-esque beard.
More like Gary Graham.
It's not as thick and luscious as either of those two. But it is getting longer and a bit of a mess.
Yeah. Are you waiting for baby to arrive before? Is it?
I've not had my haircut since September. I've not seen anyone in real life since kind of the middle of December because of lockdown and imminent baby.
So why not?
So I've just kind of given up on
actually,
life.
Actually, Phil's lying. He has seen someone. Yeah, he has seen someone. And maybe his appearance might actually put two and two together for me. And it might make me understand exactly what happened in this scenario. Phil, the other day, was power washing his drive. And his next door neighbour came up to him and asked him for a quote to power wash his drive.
He did. And it's a new neighbour, so it's only the second time I've met him, but it was about a week after the first time I've met him, and I had to kind of remind him that, no, I live here, I own this house. He thought I was like a homeless man that had been employed to do some manual labour.
Well, homeless people do not own Kircher K9s, Phil.
K7 Premium.
K7 Premium, bloody
wow,
hell.
Wow, Phil, someone's doing all right.
Woo!
Well, with your hair as long as it is on the top of your head, you would look like young Homer Simpson if you shaved off the beard, so I'd keep it. Right, this is the first of two podcasts that's coming in your feed this week, which is why you need to be subscribed, whether it's on Acast, on Spotify, on Google Podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, or in any other podcast catcher. Make sure you subscribe, and you will get our midweek domestic podcast. But, of course, this one, the big weekend, the opening weekend of the Six Nations, is where we're going to begin, and we've got so much to talk about there. Before we get into it, a reminder that if you enjoy the podcasts, if you enjoy the fact that we make sure 52 weeks of the year, 7 years and counting.
It's 9 years.
No. This is year number eight. This is season eight. So we've done seven.
Is this season eight or is this season nine? Well,
even though it says in the feed season seven. Phil,
I think it's a season eight.
Phil pointed out we made an error in season four and did that year twice. So we've done seven seasons. This is season number eight. So for 7 years and counting, we make sure you have a podcast. The only people that do it 52 weeks of the year, the only people that make sure it's there every Monday morning. And if you appreciate that fact and you want to support us so that when things ease up a bit, we can do some live podcasts, then we would we thank you very much for the support you've already given. Well, we thank you for listening, but for the people that also have shown their support at patreon.com/eggchasers, thank you very, very much. There's some little goodies on there as well, if you go to that, patreon.com/eggchasers. Right, Six Nations then. I was about to say let the post-mortem begin, but I'd actually rather start by just congratulating Scotland on an outstanding and historic performance.
It was incredible, wasn't it? Didn't go quite how I planned. I mean, I thought they were going to win. I was pretty convinced about it. I thought they would win in a 30-20 shootout. That's how I thought it was going to go down. I had no idea that they'd win in such a pragmatic way, but they did.
They certainly did. And I think it is the right place to start, is to focus on Scotland's positives, because they were the better team in pretty much every single aspect of that game for pretty much every single minute of that game.
Yeah.
They were by far the best team from minute one through to minute 80, right across the board. Their lineout was better. They disrupted England. Their scrum was better. They won penalties. Their kicking game was better. They won the territorial game multiple times. Their close combat work in the rucks and mauls was better. Their running game was better. There is pretty much no facet of that game where England were on top for any significant period of time.
No, I completely agree.
Well, Scotland were only marginally better than England at converting any opportunities into tries, because Scotland should have won by much more.
Well, so that is probably a good point, that Scotland had so much territory and so much possession. They probably should have taken more of their chances. Now, I do think a little bit of that is down to how they played the game. And they played it intelligently, both when Finn Russell was in the bin and towards the end of the game. Rather than taking points, they kicked to the corner and ran the clock down.
That's interesting, because I do not think that's intelligent. I think the running the clock down in the corner is intelligent, actually. But I thought the amount of 3 points that they turned down was a little bit silly.
Well, the kicks, they never turned down an easy kick. They had kind of 50-50 kicks. And in the scenarios, so Finn Russell's off and Hogg kicks to the corner, it's probably a less than 50-50 kick because your primary kicker's not on the pitch. So in those scenarios, it was interesting to see. And obviously, it's the kind of thing that with hindsight, you can say it's the right tactic. But you're right. Had it not quite worked out, Scotland fans would have been cursing some of those decisions. You're right to flag it.
Yeah, there's two different games going on here in my mind. There is the one game which I completely agree with you. Scotland did not score enough points. The scoreboard does not reflect the dominance that Scotland displayed during the game. But the other game is, England still could have won this.
They could have done. They could have with the last few minutes. And had England had any coherence at all, they could have put themselves in with a shot of winning it in the 78th, 79th minute. But as it was, they didn't even get close to that.
Yeah. I think the thing which England fans should be most concerned about, and the thing which Scotland fans should be most encouraged about, is the way Scotland went about their business. They kicked so intelligently and they were so pragmatic. You think of that England team and you think, yeah, they've got some really good tactical kickers there. Well, actually, you think that when they've got Ford and Farrell. When it's Farrell on his own, I thought Daly got a bit exposed. And both Hogg and Russell had an absolute field day just putting it in the corners.
So actually, I'd say Daly, I thought, did well. The problem came, actually, when Daly receives a kick, returns a kick, he then chases. And there was a couple of times when May and Watson,
I haven't seen Johnny May. Johnny May made more mistakes in this game than he has in the last 2 years since the World Cup.
Like something was underneath his skin.
Mm. Yeah, but it was not just the obvious ones of getting held up in contact or there was two relatively easy dropped balls. It was the positioning. And there was one kick from, I think it was Hogg, about halfway through the second half, where a bit of kick tennis, Elliot Daly actually puts a really good boot down on field, finds grass, and it takes a while for Hogg to collect it. And he then puts a spiral. And it's Watson and May, who are the two guys in the backfield, who should have the whole of the backfield covered with the amount of pace that they've got. And Hogg manages to find 40 yards of room and puts a kick pretty much from his own 22 deep into England's 22.
Pace and experience. And in Watson's case, experience at 15. I think if you asked Watson where he prefers to play, he'd probably say 15, which is even more disappointing.
Yes. And those two, there's that defensive side and then the offensive side. They were never brought into the game. They were never given the opportunity to come into the game for multiple reasons that I'm sure we'll explore as we go on.
Mm. Yeah. The Scottish line-out, I thought, was exceptional.
And the scrum was great as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they need to do as well.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the matchups, I was saying if only they get parity, they've got every chance of winning this. Because in the backs, I thought the matchups were far in Scotland's favour. The line out, though, it just worked like clockwork. And there's the old saying, isn't there? How do you make a black belt look like a brown belt? Well, you punch him in the face. And with England, they didn't seem to have any answer to what looked like a very basic Scottish line out proposition.
Yeah, they really struggled to disrupt Scotland. Whereas Scotland, there was two in the first half, where England finally get a foothold in the game, get both on the right-hand side, actually, as England were attacking. Two lineups right on the 22, perfect attacking ball, both of them stolen. And you add those to the Johnny Hill penalty in the first couple of minutes and a couple of horrendous Ben Youngs passes in that first half. And England actually got into Scotland's 22 about five times, maybe even six times. But they were only there for about 10 seconds, and every time they cocked it, like they just ruined it.
Yeah.
I was saying England ruined it. Some of that was down to Scotland's pressure. Certainly the line-out steals were excellent line-out steals. So Scotland did very well, but England had great attacking opportunities in that first half and did nothing at all with it.
I think the word you used, Phil, we're talking about England's lack of, was cohesion, and I think that's exactly what Scotland had. To a man, there was just a kind of confidence. And I think England have been a team that have shocked teams by a fast start. Mm. And so Scotland, with a lot of less experienced guys in their side, like, Redpath, who just looked to the man of Bourne, and Matt Ferguson as well. Mm. I mean, just... Scotland had a good start, but they all looked like they were all on the same page. And once again, and the one criticism you can say of England, and this is nothing to do with an Eddie Jones England versus a Stuart Lancaster England, it just seems to be England over many years, is when things don't go to plan, they just don't seem able to change it on the fly. And it's been a consistent problem for many, many years, and I think is symptomatic of the kind of style of play that Premiership sides play, and I think it's unfortunately too ingrained in English domestic rugby that there's this sort of brutality mentality and not a kind of problem-solving mentality.
I think you need a mix, because there is no two ways. I don't want my pack solving problems. I don't care how trendy it is.
Well, how else do you sort the line-out out? That just requires...
That is a problem.
That requires leaders, like the scrum line-out, things like that. People go, someone who has a knack for going, and it is sometimes a feeling and a natural and an instinctive thing, someone feeling there's something going on with the line-out and kind of having a sense of what it is and how to solve it.
Yeah, that's different, I think. I thought you were referring to
what I'm talking about.
The line-out definitely needs a little bit of nous. The scrum, not so much. Just push really hard. Everyone push really, really hard. Yeah, there's the individual battles, but we all know what's really going on there. On the problem-solving side, I do understand your point. But I would point out, a lot of these Scottish guys are Premiership players. Redpath, Harris, Maitland, Hogg, they all play English Premiership. So rather than it being the Premiership problem, maybe it is an English cultural problem within the national team.
Maybe, yeah. There are certainly a few Premiership players and players who were kind of cut their teeth in the Premiership, in that Scotland team. I'm not sure what the issue is, but I do agree that there is a definite issue there. And Eddie Jones has even spoken about it in the past and spoken about trying to like mix things up and stir things up with the players, just even in games, but also in training, so that they get more used to solving problems. But this was one game where it seemed evident that they were unable to solve the problems that came to them.
Is there a chance we've actually been told what the problem is and we're ignoring it willfully? So we were told, weren't we, during the autumn, that England were only working on defence. Now, I don't believe that. I think that is nonsense and somebody playing mind games. But you look at that performance and you think, maybe they were just working on defence. Because Scotland are a ferociously good attacking team. You just look at the names on their team sheet and they did only score one try. Now, granted, another day it could have been four tries. But it was, you know, the facts on the ground are it was one try. And you think, well, maybe that's what they did do. The Scottish didn't get over with the driving more, so there's that brutality side. But they have no attack. Now, I don't often believe Eddie Jones when he says these things, but when he does say it and they play like that, maybe there is something to it.
Well, I think that he said that in the autumn, and I actually, looking at the performances in the autumn, do believe him. Now, he has said that they have tried to open up the attack in the two-week camp that they had before going into this game. Now, but I think that point hints at the problem. And I think this performance to me, I watched it back again today.
Done, mate. I thought about that, but thinking of the pod, but no, I couldn't take it.
And I watched it back actually to try and, because when I watched it on Saturday night, I watched it, I was kind of half making tea for my lad, but also half trying to enjoy a beer and watch the game. And you can kind of do neither properly. But I got the impression that the ref had a bit of a stinker. And then I watched it back today. Well, I watched it back today and I think there were two or three bad decisions against England. Besides that, I think pretty much, so I think 80% of the decisions were correct. Yeah. But I'll go into that in a little bit more because I think there is something to explore on the defence. But the key point for me around England is I think this is still a hangover from the World Cup final. And let me just explain that. And I've kind of fleshed out my thinking from the autumn a little bit better as well. So England got beaten up in the final. Like, well and truly beaten up by South Africa, right across the board, in the backs and in the pack, but mainly in the pack.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at that as a binary problem, just purely the physical aspect of the problem, there are two solutions to it. The solution that Eddie Jones appears to have chosen, which is we are going to be so physical, so confrontational, that no one is ever going to beat us up again. And that's what he tried to do in autumn, did it semi-successfully in autumn, and it's what he's tried to instill in his team. Now, the other side of that, of solving that problem is, well, you are always going to get beaten up at some point. You cannot beat every single other team in the world up because they are also trying to beat you up at the same time. So perhaps the smart rugby is you've got to back yourself to at least get parity up front, but you've got to have other options and other weapons in your armory that allow you to win games when you're not necessarily performing up front.
And go on.
And Sale on Friday night, which we'll mention on the midweek domestic podcast, but like there are other ways to do it. And
there's there's no coach with more pedigree at having demonstrated doing that, by the way, than the former Japan coach Eddie Jones.
That's a great point, Tim. But they seem to have thrown all their eggs in one basket. That is, like, it's a massive risk, and all it takes is someone like, well, Scotland. They fronted up beautifully up front. They disrupted everything England had to offer in the pack, and then England had no answer. They didn't. They couldn't think their way out of the problem, and they hadn't been given the skills in their armory to kind of fight their way out of the problem. And this was the consequence.
Going back to the binary thing, anyone who treats a block of training as just defence and a block of games as just defence and then just attack, you do run into the same kind of issues. Because I don't think you can look at just attack or just defence. What about the other phases of the game? So Eddie Jones allegedly says there's six phases of the game. What they are, I cannot remember off the top of my head. It's like attack, defence, set piece, restart. I don't know exactly how he looks at it. But I would say one of the phases of the game is winning possession back and then attacking the turnover. And I'm sure England do all these things, but I can't get over the fact that you want to do one thing and then come back to the next thing later. I think you have to do it all, you know, holistically.
I've got no problem with a lot of what England did in terms of what they were doing at certain times. A lot of the time when they kicked, I would go, yeah, actually, probably the right thing to do there is kick, because the poor conditions, you're up against a really good Scottish defence and you're in your own half and their back row are dangerous, so you don't want to give them opportunities to kick 3 points. So generally speaking, I'm like going, yeah, okay, a kick's probably kick's the right thing to do. So, but there's two things there. One, the execution of those kicks was awful. The reaction of players to the kicks and the chase, you saw how much better Scotland's and people like Sean Maitland were than the England back three or England players in general. And thirdly, it's identifying the few occasions when that isn't the right thing to do. For example, and there's a still that's a lot of people have shared on social media and stuff, of in when Finn Russell was in the bin on about 43 minutes, just the start of the second half, and England were just like on their own 10-metre line and kicked it when they had probably a 7-2 overlap.
Let's get into the personnel decisions, because that comes down to personnel, isn't it? Owen Farrell in particular. Where do we stand on the form of the England team as individuals for their clubs?
Well, five of them, other than Billy Vunipola playing one game, five of the starting 15 haven't played since whenever it was, October.
Yeah.
So it's hard to talk about form.
Yeah, there is a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking going on here, with people that a week ago were going, and myself included, saying, yeah, it's not ideal, but it is what it is. We knew that Saracens were going down and this was going to be the case. But actually, these are very, very vastly experienced international players, and Argentina managed it and got their first ever win against New Zealand. So there's no reason why they couldn't arrive ready. And then all of a sudden, the script is, they should never have been picked because they haven't played club rugby. I just feel that's Monday morning quarterbacking going on.
I was open to both options happening. So, you know, we are told continuously they play too much rugby, they're too tired. We hear this all the time.
Yeah, didn't Billy Vunipola apparently take a pay cut in order to stay? He said he'd take a pay cut to play less.
Yeah, he definitely said that. Whether he has taken that pay cut,
yeah, of course.
The inquiry will find out later. On the resting of players, thinking back about it now it's happened, there has been some whinging about Johnny Sexton not being match ready because of the welfare policies in Ireland.
I'm really sorry to interrupt. I would just say the year he won World Player of the Year, he played five times. Or
yeah,
was it five
I'm
or
not sure.
Six or seven times for Leinster in the whole season.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. I'm still not sure if it is a thing or not. I still don't know. I would say based on this game, it looks like it is a thing. Billy in particular. Mm. I also think Sean Maitland may prove that certain positions don't need to be playing all the time. But Sean Maitland's job is to run up and down the field chasing high balls, whereas Owen Farrell has to be sharp. He has to be sharp. And the difference between him and Finn Russell was obvious. It was obvious
Think Finn Russell had one of his better games, to be honest.
He didn't, but he was still a million times better than Owen. Outside of Itoje, the Saracens lads were poor, I thought. Very poor. And you don't often say that about them. They are magnificent players in their own right, but they weren't yesterday.
I thought Itoje was very good. I thought Elliot Daly actually played well. And I've seen him get a bit of stick, but as I said before, I don't think it was him who had any major mistakes or anything like that.
I
think it, rather than being positional, I almost think it's an individual aspect. What is that individual's mentality? Do they go, if they're injured or not playing, do they go home and train just as hard, or do they sit and eat Dominoes and chicken wings?
I'm not sure that's a real good metric for professional team sport players. I mean, it is great if you can do that. I mean, I'm saying this because I know I couldn't do it, and I know many other players could not just go home and work out really hard. You could. I couldn't. I bet Sean Maitland can, and I bet Billy can't. You know, just things like that.
I bet he told you he can, for example.
Yes. I mean, I don't know if that's true or not. It could be completely false. But I just don't think it's a good metric because it's unrealistic to say, yeah, just come match ready.
Well, it's a good metric, as in it's a good differentiator, as in it's something that you're probably agreeing with the principle. It's a bad thing for the team, as in it's a bad thing if you're relying on individuals to do their own work, and some of those individuals don't have that capacity for it.
The equivalent would be airline pilots. You can either train in our official system, or we'll just trust that you go home and read the appropriate books for your CPD, and we'll see you for your Monday morning flight.
Is there an element of correlation, not necessarily equaling causation? Because I cannot think of a more professional rugby player than Owen Farrell. And, you know, hear me now, believe me later, to use a JBism, if the Lions goes ahead this summer, he'll be starting 10, ahead of Dan Bigger and ahead of Finn Russell. He is absolutely world-class. And players, even the very best players, even Beauden Barrett, even Antoine Dupont, have bad games. And Owen Farrell had a bad game. But I think suddenly, necessarily, it may well be the case that it was because he was underprepared because he hasn't played games. It could just be he had a bad game in a team that had a really off day. And that's okay. But just to suddenly say, Owen Farrell can't play.
Because he was dreadful.
He had a bad game. For one thing, what do you do? If you assume and take the correlation and causation and say it's because he hasn't played games, well, then what do you do? Because what do you do? Just not play him? Play him till next year?
This is a really interesting question, okay? So what do you do with him? Now,
he's your captain and he's your best player. You trust him. Well, he's one of your best players. You trust him. I'm not saying necessarily play him against Italy. We can get onto that. But it's obvious what you do with Owen Farrell. He's a world-class player.
It's not obvious to me. So players respond to different things differently. And we need to know the reasons. If it turns out that he does need game time at the highest level of, you know, Europe and the Premiership and all the rest of it, it's completely understandable. It's not a slight on him that he needs to be competing regularly. In fact, if anything, it just shows what kind of a competitor that he is. And, you know, he is now playing international, and you do need to come into that in not just physically great shape, but mentally great shape.
All right, well, I'll fire back at you with Alan Wynne-Jones, who was poor in recent games, hasn't really played, came back in and was great today.
Yeah, and
so there's
because just not every player is the same. So that's what I'd say.
Well, so then what you're saying is you don't have to be.
No, if you, that's you, exactly
you,
what I'm saying.
You just said if you're playing international rugby, you have to be ready to come in.
Now, Alan Jones can make himself mentally ready differently to Owen Farrell. I have no problems with different players doing different things. So if that's the reason, that's fine. Now, maybe the reason might be Owen Farrell was as well prepared as he possibly could be, but England have not really been working on attack. Now, if that's the case, it'd be a bit silly to get rid of Owen Farrell and throw somebody else in there who'd be equally not as sharp for attack, because that's just not what England have been working on. So we need to understand what it is that made Owen Farrell play as bad as he did.
It could be Scottish back row being brilliant and him having a scrum half that delivers really slow ball.
It could be that.
I was going to say, I think basically the whole of the back line, there's two big problems, because none of the back line played well for England. There are two big problems. One, I suspect it might be a bit of the attack thing. If what Eddie said was true and they didn't do anything across the autumn. And the other is they were getting terrible ball. They were getting slow, disrupted back foot ball. And actually they were rarely getting ball, because they were losing it, the pack was losing it. So it is difficult to criticise. Like, you can't really criticise someone like Ollie Lawrence in that game.
No.
He had one run in the whole game. Just because he's not getting the ball.
I mean, and presumably, England still want to win this game. And that sounds stupid, but they do want to win this game. I assume they don't want to say, OK, we're behind, but what's really important is we carry on working on our defence now and treating it as a training game. So the substitution of Ollie Lawrence, I thought, was a terrible decision, because it was clear to me that Owen Farrell should have come off. Clear as day, and you leave your midfield as it is. Owen Farrell, it's probably the worst game I've ever seen him have. But I'm open to suggestions that there are reasons for it. And also, you know, if the defence theory is correct, do I really want George Ford to stand in there and just get run over, or call up a young lad like Smith and just watch Smith get run over? I mean, the reason you play these fly halves is because they what they can do going forward, as well as defensively. So I don't see making a change being a reasonable proposition unless you can prove that Owen Farrell came into that game mentally undercooked because he hasn't had game time.
Which I'd be astonished if that was the case. No, having watched and listened to Owen Farrell many times and listening to him after the game in this scenario, I'd be astonished if it was a mental lack of preparation. It just doesn't strike me that that is the case.
I mean, why? Because you've done pre-season. You've both done pre-seasons. And everyone who comes into pre-season drops the ball. I went to a bloody barbecue at Sale Sharks, and they, in front of all the sponsors, they got the players to do some passing drills. They looked like level 8 players because they're in pre-season. So you that, do
that's
sharpen
not mental.
Up.
That's not mental preparation.
Well, I don't know what you call it, because I would say, you know, rehearsing things and drilling and all that stuff. I mean, these players don't necessarily forget their skills. They just need to get back in the groove. Now, whether that's, you know, the same as when a player is warming up to take shots at a basketball net or what, I don't know. Whether that's mental or physical, maybe is something of a grey area there.
Well, those are closed. Those are kind of closed, highly controllable motor skills, but this is a multifaceted, constantly moving game where issues can compound. And I think it was really interesting, and Johnny Wilkinson, a very, very straight-laced kind of pundit, I don't know whether you listened to him after the game.
No, I don't listen to pundits.
Did you hear Johnny Wilkinson breaking it down after the game, Phil?
I didn't, no.
No, okay. Well, I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And Johnny Wilkinson was recalling times in the build-up to 2003. He said sometimes, he was just explaining, he said sometimes we played games and we had an off day, and the next game we tried harder and it got worse, and then we tried harder.
He said, Alex Cuthbert?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. He said when they actually kind of solved it and it clicked, he said it was actually really, really small things that needed tinkering with. It was really small, but it sometimes you sort of try harder and tense up. It was I thought it was a really, really good insight, and it made me feel more comfortable about the defeat, because I don't think it's a massive existential issue for this England team. They are largely the same team that got to a World Cup final and blitzed New Zealand and are capable of blitzing any team in the world. I think they are having an off time. I think they're probably trying a bit too hard. I think there's not enough leadership, albeit there's not a lot of highly capped players.
Is there? There's not enough form in that team. Like, Mark Wilson is one of my favourite players. I think he's brilliant. An older, more experienced guy. You know, we're talking about, you know, who are the professionals that keep themselves in shape? Mark Wilson. When was the last time he had a great game for his club? Not in Sale Sharks. So we're looking like before the World Cup.
When the England team was announced on our rugby draft WhatsApp group, you said, my God, that's a serious England team.
Yeah, and do you know what I was doing? If you work in investments, as I do, everyone always remembers their portfolio at their height. They never remember the midpoint or the reasonable point. They always remember it at its height. And you look at that team, you go, yeah, that is a serious team. But it is a serious team when you think about Will Stewart destroying everyone last year, or you think about the damage that Mark Wilson does at 8 and at 6, and you think about Tom Curry, you know, when he's really going well. And Billy. Billy was the best player on the planet, arguably, for about 2 years. He looked like a shadow of himself. So, you know, I'm as guilty as anyone as remembering players at their height. But, you know, these players are not playing there.
Well, Tom Curry's been in form and been playing, and he gave away some brain-dead pens and
wasn't his best, was
got
it?
Got outplayed.
Yeah.
Sorry, Phil, you were about to jump in then.
Tom Curry's best moment was with about 4 minutes to go, where he made a kind of half break down the left wing.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, I think we've dissected the England side of this enough. I don't actually think we've given quite enough praise to Scotland yet. Yeah. I know we did it very well at the start, but I just wanted to go over again some of the performances. And that Scotland team, I thought their back row was unbelievably good.
It was so good.
was such we flagged it last week of them being like gritty and hard to play against, abrasive nuisances. But that all of that is doing them a disservice because they were just outstanding.
Did not expect
game.
That from Matt Ferguson. I thought he might be a little chink in their armour.
Mm.
Fair play.
And the back line, I thought Maitland and Doohan did superbly well
they
in difficult
great.
Conditions and certainly miles better than the England wingers. I thought Redpath and Harris was a superb combination. Redpath, you said it before, Tim, to the manor born, he looked like an international 12 immediately.
Yeah.
And the best player on the pitch by some distance, and there were some really good performances.
I was looking forward to this centre partnership, basically as soon as I realised it was a possibility. I've thought this is a nicely balanced combo.
And on Redpath, because I know Owen Slot in the Times did an article saying England are going to rue this. Can I just say, I'm absolutely delighted that Cameron Redpath was wearing a Scotland shirt. And because his dad's a legendary Scottish player and he's Scottish and he should be playing for Scotland.
Doesn't get paid as much, Tim.
I don't care about the money.
You should care about the money.
I'm an England fan and I want the best for my team, and Cam Redpath may have been the sort of 12 that we've been talking about that England don't have. I am delighted that he's a Scottish player.
But do you know why you should be angry? You should be angry because I wasn't sure that England were going to pick a centre partnership which is going to be as balanced as the Scottish one. And they did. They had a magnificent centre partnership. But England failed to utilise them. I think Slade and Lawrence are probably every bit as talented as Harris and Redpath, and probably just as balanced too. I mean, obviously they're playing 12-13 rather than 13-12, but you know, it doesn't take much imagination to solve that.
Well, let's stay on Scotland because Phil's just about to mention the best player on the pitch.
Yeah, the best player on the pitch by some distance, I think. And Scotland had a lot of amazing performances. The best player was Stuart Hogg.
Yeah,
I thought Stuart Hogg was light years. He was unbelievably good.
He was so good.
Just everything he did. His running game was so dangerous multiple times. He made brilliant breaks beating multiple defenders, and his kicking was as good as I've ever seen it. And I said this in the run-up to X's double, actually, but I was really impressed with the way that he's added like the tactical kicking. He's always had a big boot, but he's really added the intelligent tactical kicking to his game, and it was brilliant in this game.
What does Baxter say? He says he likes players with the ability to learn.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you were criticising
Stuart Hogg for saying he's learning about 2 months ago.
No, that's different. That's different.
Johnny Gray as well. Johnny Gray is so consistently brilliant that you almost don't give him credit for just how awesome he is. But him and Cummings in the were just...
Cherry and Cherry's the one that I like.
Relentless.
George Turner's arrows were brilliant under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
You
right?
Yeah.
Question.
We haven't lost any.
No.
Okay.
JB, question for you. Cam Redpath, if you were advising him, would you have advised England?
Yeah, 100%.
As I imagine his dad did.
His dad literally did.
Is that a statement? Is that a known fact?
I don't know if it's a known fact, but I'd go for a known fact.
His dad said to him, "Play for England because you'll get more money."
I'm not putting words into his mouth, but yeah, you can safely assume that.
But there's a trade off there, because England he'll get roughly three times what Scotland get per game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's much harder to get 100 caps for England.
He'll get 100 caps for Scotland.
No
doubt.
Fitness allowing, he's the kind of guy who will get 100 caps for Scotland.
There again,
and should.
If Eddie likes you, you do race. You do get a lot of caps. I mean, George Ford's on 52 or something.
Quite right.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but look at how much competition that there is. You know, if Eddie likes you, you will play almost every game. If you're one of his men, and I'm not sure, you know, that's the decision you've got to make, isn't it, when picking the international team, particularly when there's a coach as embedded as Eddie, because he's not going anywhere. So if you have the idea that maybe he doesn't fancy you, and I'm guessing that's the idea that Redpath must have had, he was wise to move. But if Eddie had fancied him, get in. Now, the other part of this, which I find fascinating, is did Eddie pick him because it was a political selection, a predatory selection, like he did for Sam Moore, like he did for Gary Graham, like he did for Ben Vallacott, like he's might be doing for Paolo Adogu? We don't know. We'll have to see. And if so, there's a kind of sweet poetic justice that this is how it manifested itself on Saturday.
Well, I don't mind how it came about. Because I'm glad Cam. Just to return to it, I'm glad Cam Redpath is in a Scotland jersey, because I've said many times about how I dislike project players, and I like the integrity of.
I think he's born in the Northwest.
Yeah, oh, come on. And he went to school at Sedbergh, and he's played. He played at Sale and Bath. I don't care. He's Scottish.
Pretty English.
He's Scottish.
He's pretty English.
His dad's a Scottish legend.
Do you know where he was born?
Was it?
I'm gonna guess it's North. Hang on.
Oh no, France. I bet.
Oh, that's a good shot.
Because his dad would have been playing in France.
Correct. Yeah, he was born in France.
Nice.
He was born in Narbonne.
He should have gone there. He should have played for France.
Now you're talking.
So we can return to both of these sides as we look ahead to next week, and we can talk about selections in a little bit. Before we just depart England, I just want to say that shirt, that did not commemorate 150 years. It looked like a T-shirt with someone just drawing a rose on a felt tip.
I mean, it's one of the... It's not hard to do a throwback shirt. And do you know what? I thought Umbro would be good at this. I thought it'd be good because under Fabio Capello, they got the English football team, the soccer team, the players from the EPL to get tailored for their shirts. And they looked magnificent. They even made those spindly armed football players look good. So rugby players should be a dream. No, not one bit of it. Looks absolutely dreadful in every way.
I was hoping for a bit better than this because I've got quite fond memories. I'm just trying to find a picture of it.
Oh, the purple one.
No, there was one before the purple one. It was about 2008 or 2009 that England wore against Wales in the Six Nations. That it might have been 2011, might have been 140 years. Where James Haskell scored two tries against Wales wearing a retro England shirt that I've got really fond memories of.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Hmm.
Anyway, they didn't do this. And a couple of other things. Ellis Genge's sideburns. What's going on? Or lack of. I don't know what's going on there. There's a few players in the England team where I reckon lost a bet.
Yeah. Oh, just last thing on this game.
But Hamish Watson's mullet. Oh my goodness, that's a glorious thing.
What about the reffing? Sorry. We have to just discuss this very quickly.
Well, Phil said he's watched it a second time, and I trust Phil's judgment that he got 80% of it right. My bugbear with the refereeing, I thought when I was watching the game, he's having a shocker. And I'm willing to be wrong on that, and I fully acknowledge I'm biased and that can influence the way you look at it. But the one thing I cannot forgive, and it's not just Andrew Brace, although I think he's worse than most. There was one during the Finn Russell 10 minutes. If you went back and looked at that, more than half of the 10 minutes would have been spent with players standing, not even in a scrum, standing, waiting to get into a scrum. And the problem I have with this is one of the biggest shop windows for rugby union. And we all love the sport and we want as many people to enjoy it, to love it, both as spectators, but maybe want to take their kids along to a local club to fill the coffers, to then have people enjoy it and fitness and health and enjoy the game for a lifetime. That, for a lot of people, would have been a dreadful spectacle.
Mm.
As you know, put aside the fact there was no crowd this time, which we'll add to it. There, I can just say from my wife, just stood there, she was saying, there's a lot of standing around.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but yeah, fine. You need to understand the game, you need to put in the effort, because the NFL is on tonight.
What do you mean, put in the effort?
As in, you need to put in the effort. You need to do the hard yards. You need to watch game after game after game and understand what you're looking at. I don't buy the argument that...
I'm
a casual observer can't do it. Look... Millions of casual observers.
What I'm not saying is I want loads of tries, super rugby style. What I'm saying is I want more ball in play time. Have you noticed? I'll just say this. Have you noticed no TV broadcaster mentions ball in play time anymore? There's a reason why.
I haven't noticed
because it would be embarrassing for the game.
Well, maybe
if it was ever made public, it would be an embarrassment for the game.
Well, maybe they should. Well, firstly, maybe they should. And second of all, tonight the Super Bowl is on. It's an hour-long game, which is going to be spread over 3 hours. So the idea that standing around and no action somehow detracts from a sport, doesn't necessarily hold true, because we're going to watch one tonight which will have more viewers than any other.
But you still get the action. In rugby, it's a zero-sum game. For every minute that's stood around, you lose a minute of action.
Yeah, maybe they need to be better with the clock. Maybe they need to take the clock off. I'd be up for that. Maybe take the clock off the referee. I'd be up for that too.
Yeah, I could go for that. Although I do quite like it. Kind of the 2 hour window for a rugby game does feel about right. Especially as we often do, we watch kind of 5+ games of rugby in a weekend. To do that, if each one is taking 4 hours, becomes increasingly difficult.
So I just want to say a couple of things about the officiating. Number one,
yeah,
the decision against Ellis Genge, I thought, was an absolute travesty. I cannot.
It was ludicrous.
I mean, that is not acceptable. When you expect your players to behave.
For anyone who can't remember, it was when Ellis Genge went in low on the hooker, I think it was.
Yeah.
Hip shoulder connected, and that flipped him, and Ellis Genge's arms, which did wrap, just missed the bottom of his feet. And it was given as a no arms tackle.
I mean, that's ridiculous. The problem is, you want to watch a game and you want to kind of relate to how you play the game. I know amateurs play it differently to pros, but you can see an arm wrap. There is no way on earth that that is a penalty. No way on earth. And it's such an important penalty too. It's a massively important penalty. In fact, every decision in this game, because it turned out to be so close, is a massively important decision. So you're watching this, you're thinking, he's tried to wrap his arms. He's clearly tried to wrap his arms. It didn't happen. There is no way that that is a penalty. It was wrong. And if you've got a TMO as well, even less of an excuse. Even less. So that's that. The other one was the Billy yellow card. That's not a yellow card. The Finn Russell yellow card is yellow all day. I mean, some people might even say that's a red because it's such deliberate foul play. And I think it was Rougerie, wasn't it, who broke his leg from a Phil Greening trip? Anyway,
I'm fine with the yellow for that, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine with the yellow, but it could be red.
I'm okay.
I'm not fine with the yellow for Billy. I mean, that's just ridiculous. What happened to the decision tree where, okay, it's high and then mitigating factors including force? There was no force in it. The guy was going down.
I think that was half given for the high tackle and half given for the compounding of team errors. Which
that I'm okay with.
It wasn't because England weren't given a warning, but that's how it was kind of treated. So it was a bit of a weird one.
Yeah. If that's the case, I'm okay with it. If it is a standalone high shot, that's not a high shot. It is a high shot, but it's not a yellow card high shot.
Yeah. It certainly wasn't the normal decision-making tree, exactly as you said. But also, equally, there wasn't a team warning, unless I missed it both times I watched it.
Yeah, I think they were warned, actually, thinking about it.
It was an excruciating game to watch as an England fan, so I'm fully aware.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, of course you did.
Really? You're not an England fan.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying I enjoyed it.
An excruciating game to watch as an England fan, so I'm fully aware that the tension may have translated into the way that I interpreted Andrew Brace, but I just did not like him, the way he managed the game, and that's all I would say.
I didn't particularly like the way he managed the game. I think, as I said before, 80% of his decisions were correct. The bit that frustrated me a little bit was I think there was quite a bit of inconsistency. And as probably a slightly biased fan, although I tried to be objective second time I watched it, I think quite a bit of the inconsistency went against England. A good one, because there's a few, mostly around the ruck, actually. But a good example is the Johnny Hill penalty in the first minute, where he flops off his feet, or he clears out very low, clears out, kind of goes onto his chest.
Yeah, fair enough.
Over Itoji, when Itoji's 2 yards from the line, that had that not been given as a penalty, I'm fairly confident England get at least 3 points in that scenario. Mm-hmm. But that, the ruck before that, the ruck from the charge down, was almost a mirror image in the reverse way. That happens. Scotland did it multiple times throughout the game. England did it multiple other times throughout the game. It never, ever got pinged besides that one, including when Finn Russell had the charge down kick. There's 2 minutes left on the clock. Finn Russell has the charge down kick, and two Scotland players do it almost identical to that to secure their own ball, and it wasn't given then either. So that inconsistency is infuriating. That's not why England lost, but it's just it's frustrating to watch. That.
And this isn't sour grapes. Scotland were the better team, and
massively. Scotland should have won by more.
Go on, be sour. Go on, do it. No, people want it.
No,
Scotland should have won by 15 points.
Yeah. No, and can I just say
on that performance?
We saw a bit of Finn sanity as well in this game.
Yes, we did.
I just love in this modern uber professional game to see. I'm looking at a picture now of Finn Russell with the top of the Calcutta Cup on his head and his tongue stuck out.
That's what happens when you're really good.
I just love it. I'm sure he had more. I'm sure he was allowed to have more than the two beers after. Yeah. After that one. And I hope he did. Well, no, that's why he was kicked out of camp, because he wanted more than two.
Right, got you.
I thought he was only allowed two at half time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Would you guys make any changes to the next England team?
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that when we look ahead to the next game.
Because
we've just been talking about a referee, and that actually is a good segue into Wales versus Ireland. Because Billy Burns tried his best to take the heat off Peter Omani, but that was a defining moment in that game.
Yeah, I was watching this and I was thinking, somebody's getting fired. I don't know who it's going to be, though. I was trying to work out who's getting fired, because Ireland came out of it looking okay in the end, until the very end. They sort of rallied a little bit. They played okay. I still think Ireland should be beating Wales by a good old margin. And should Peter Omani have stayed on, I suspect that they probably would have, actually.
This is Six Nations, and aside from Italy, I don't think you say that about any matchup.
No, I do. I mean, I haven't seen anything from this Welsh team since Pivac's taken over, which fills me with any confidence whatsoever.
Do you not think there's a few green shoots in this game?
Not really.
Really?
I mean, he tried to move on from Warren Gatland by picking the 2013 Grand Slam team, from what I can tell. No. They're playing as an understrength Ireland. I thought there might be... Okay, if this is the bounce back, if this is Six Nation bounce back and passion, let's be very worried for when that runs out.
Well, I'm not sure I'd say the bounce back and passion, but I think while Wales played badly at times, I think there are some green shoots. There's some positives to take from this game. And the two that I'd mention now would be, I thought, other than the Tyburn try when Henshaw burst through, I thought the defensive structure and commitment was very good.
Yep.
And there was several times where, including the Lewis Rees-Sammet try, which was excellent, but several times where the back line's handling was as good as I've seen it from a Wales back line, particularly one including George North and Lee Halfpenny, who both put in excellent hands for that Lewis Rees-Sammet try.
They did.
So those two, now they're not going to, that alone is not going to win you games, but it's improvements from the position they were in last year, certainly. I don't think it's all negative for Wales.
No, not at all. And players like Alan Wynne was back to Alan Wynne.
He put in some good hits.
Yeah, but to think about it, he was symptomatic of Wales prior to today, where he'd looked, and people were saying, oh God, he's not going to make the Lions, is he? He was very much off form and in a Wales team, and this is why I sort of, you know, dovetail it with England and say this is why I'm not panicking yet, because Wales were really bad and Alan Wynn was looking a shadow of the man we knew, and he was looking great today in a team that had a lot more energy.
When Alan Wynn well-rested was playing second fiddle to Sam Warburton, and this was during the New Zealand tour, people were saying he was past it then. Look, it's his third tour or whatever it was. This guy is done. He's past it. Since he's become the captain of Wales, and he's had some cracking results under Gatland, particularly the win against England 2 years ago now, he has developed this cult status. And I think this cult status both overplays when he doesn't do so well and overplays when he does as expected. And I don't think there's any difference to this. I thought he played well. I thought he played like Alan Wynn-Jones. I don't think he did anything exceptional or anything over what he normally does. He's still a very, very good player.
Maybe that's why Jake Ball hit him. He just said, come on, Alan, snap yourself out of this rut you're in. That's donk.
The best way I can look at Wales is the way I looked at Wasps, which was when they were under Di Young, they were a talent-based team. You just get your best players out, and anything which isn't your best player is going to be a weakness, and you need everyone fit and firing all the time. And then subsequent to that, Wasps now have become a very well-coached team where they can put in anyone, and yeah, we'll talk about how they went on the weekend.
Really?
Well, yeah, they won 10 games on the trot. Midweek games, weekend games, got a semi-final.
Yeah,
fell
also
final.
Had some very, very important people come back that were ill, that were not ill, injured for a long time, like Jimmy Gopperth and Jack Willis.
With a very, very small squad, a very inexpensive squad. So you can see the difference which coaching makes. And I think Wales have done the opposite. They've gone from a very well-coached team into a team which relies on their big players and their skillful players putting in a performance. And you can't win that many games like that, particularly at international. This is the problem that Wales are going to continue to have.
They've just won a Six Nations game, mate.
Against 14 people. Come on. Come on. So it isn't. I wouldn't be getting carried away by this Wales performance, not one bit. But we'll see what next week brings.
This does feel a little bit like when England were doing really well and we'd joke and go, come on then, tell us why England need to worry, JB. Yeah.
Well, but Wales aren't doing really well, are they?
Well, no, there were lots of elements that were a big step up. They've got some issues because they've got a lot of things that they need to solve and improve. Like their line-out was dreadful, for example.
Mm.
But there were a lot of things that were much, much improved from the autumn.
I would be very careful before taking things from this game and saying, yeah, this is an improvement. They're against a 14-man island for how long? 70 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
So
65-70 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. And they didn't actually look that comfortable for most of it.
They certainly didn't for the first 20 or so when Ireland came out of the block and scored 13 points.
Mm.
But the one man missing, I'm still, I know I bang this drum frequently, but I'm convinced if you're a bad, disorganised team, it is a real problem. If you're a well-organized, well-drilled, intelligent team, like Ireland clearly were, because they knew who was going where in every scenario when they were a man down, it's far less of an issue. Now, I think it probably... Ireland had a shot to win it anyway, even though they were down to 14 men for 65, 70 minutes, that Billy Burns fluffed. Had they had a full complement for the full game, I probably think they might have just snuck it, but I don't think they batter Wales in this scenario at all. Well, Wales were by far the best team for the 15 minutes or whatever it was when Ireland had 15 men.
I mean, yeah, maybe. I just don't think... No, I'm sticking exactly where I was before, which is a 14-man Ireland. I thought Ireland would win this by 10 points. Billy Burns missed a kick to touch. You know, there's every chance Ireland could have won this. Every chance, except for one individual skill error. It just shows that international rugby is a tight, tight arena. I am worried for Wales, and I suspect there's going to be a change of management by the end of the Six Nations. I really do.
Put it on the whiteboard.
It's gone missing. Oh, no, it hasn't gone missing.
No, there it is. It's just behind that stolen Sedgley Tigers sign.
Oh, yeah. Whoops.
Put it on the whiteboard. Are you going to put it on the whiteboard?
Well, I don't have a marker. But
if you had a marker, would you write it on the whiteboard?
I'll put this on the whiteboard. Wales finished second bottom.
Wales finished fifth.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with that. Although getting a win against Ireland is a good start. I will say one thing in this, that neither team will be taking the positives out of it, because they're not Pat Lam. This was an attritional game. Right? Both of them lost so many players throughout this game. It was absolutely brutal.
It was a brutal game.
That's not going to bode well for the rest of the Six Nations for either of them.
I would have liked to have seen more of Dan Lydia. I know I've seen him in the past, but he's one of those players that I just love, hardworking.
I thought
big,
you just
strong.
Said you just started this thing by saying, "Oh, he's just picked the team from the won the Grand Slam in whatever year."
I don't care. I can still have fun this. The same way that Tom Brady is playing tonight at age 42. Look, I would
43.
I do you know who I'd love to see back in an England shirt? Richard Wigglesworth. That's who I want to see. So just because I said that does not mean I don't wish him the best of luck and I want to see him play.
Get Richard Hill back in an England shirt. There's a player I enjoy watching.
Yeah. If I could see Dan Lydia do a few ankle tackles, I'd have been very happy.
Can I just say go on, Phil. You just say what you're going to say there.
I was just going to say that Ellis Genge tackle was very much a Dan Lydiot special.
It was.
Yep.
Yeah, it was. Best thing about the coverage today on BBC was the fact that they did not, and I reckon they may well have heeded the criticisms in previous years, the pre-match to Wales v Ireland was not a big chat about England, which in every other year it has been. In fact, they did not mention England v Scotland in the entire build-up to...
They did something worse.
...to Wales Ireland.
I really have a massive bugbear about the coverage of Six Nations. I know
I want to give credit where credit's due, because I may well agree with what you're saying, but I just wanted to say, well done BBC for that, for not just rabbiting on about England.
Okay, so here's what annoys me about the coverage of the Six Nations. And maybe it's because I'm spoiled and also a bit of a brat and also contrarian, but still. every time I watch BT Sport, and this isn't just a blind shout out to BT Sport, or indeed Premier Sport, anyone who does broadcasting of rugby on a regular basis, I know the effort that goes into making a rugby broadcast. So I know that someone like Ugo Monier or someone like Nick Mullins or someone like yourself, Tim, will call around the clubs. They'll make sure that they know what they're doing. They'll talk to players. I mean, they'll, in some cases, and I've seen this myself, they'll literally stand on the sidelines with binoculars and a pad of paper during training and write things down. To put in a really high-quality rugby broadcast is bloody hard. And they don't do it just on a one-off. They start with the rubbish games and you work your way up and you finally get there and then you do the Premiership and eventually you should end up in Six Nations. And what annoys me beyond belief is that when they announce these people who are going to be the pundits, or indeed even the presenters for Six Nations, they're people that are basically part-timers. What on earth does Martin Johnson know about Irish rugby or Welsh rugby? Is he on the sidelines of the Pro 14? Is he doing it week in, week out? Does he know the nuances of the relationships between, I don't know, the Scarlets players, or you know what the last derby was? Who is his contact at the Scarlets? I just cannot for the life of me understand why they have the Guskets and the Brian Moores and the Woodwards. They have nothing of note to say because they're no longer in the game, and it's really hard. You can't just show up after a whole season's been on, sit down and tell us about rugby. We need experts.
All right, well, I'm going to just play devil's advocate and give an alternative point, which is that is a point, and I can understand and appreciate the sentiment of that point. I would say we are the very, very tip of the pyramid in terms of hours spent watching rugby.
And there is an argument about that.
And the majority of the millions of people who would have watched these terrestrial broadcasts, particularly at a time like now, this is why I was so frustrated with the lack of ball in play time in the England Scotland game, because as it turned out on ITV, there were 8.5 million people watched that, which is that is un unheard of for well, not unheard of because it happens most years, but that, I mean, that is just,
I know what you mean,
mind-boggling numbers for rugby. The vast majority of those are not people that actually care about a lot of the things you and I and Phil and many people listening will care about. So I'm not negating your point. I'm just saying, actually, you've got to remember, a broadcast of this scale has to appeal to, yes, your real in-deep rugby fans who want those nuggets of real knowledge, and people that are just watching that one of only a half a dozen games they watch all year.
They'd be better getting Chris Jones on. I tell you what, a smart appointment is someone like Jim Hamilton. Jim Hamilton just lives and breathes rugby all week. He does a podcast on it. I'm not saying we should employ podcasters, of course not. That's a ridiculous thing to say. He does Top 14. And I just think you need to be on this all the time in order to give a really good product. And there's plenty of people out there to do it.
Well, this is one of rugby's issues, which have I mentioned this before? I don't know. I've spoken with a radio station about a rugby show in the past, and they've said, right, we just need someone, and they want it to appeal to a mass audience, and so they said, Tim, we'd want you to do it, and we'd need to do it with someone who is a household name. And when you actually go, well, you name them, who's a household rugby name? You joke. Yeah.
How?
He's on the list because he was in an England team when...
Right.
He was in an England team when it was on terrestrial TV and England was successful and winning Grand Slams, and there was only four channels.
I know. We do this back to front, okay? So we plan your rugby show for 18 months' time, okay? Now, in the meantime, pick the guy that you want to work with. Who would you most like to work with who's kind of semi-retired or about to retire? Who's the player that you want?
Tom Wood.
Tom would be an interesting bloke to do it with.
Courtney Laws.
Actually, yes, Courtney Laws.
Courtney Laws, right? Yeah. I think Courtney Laws is definitely the future of broadcasting, right? So what we do with Courtney, A, he's already got a fairly big profile and big name, but maybe it's not big enough. So this Christmas, we get him with Strictly Come Dancing.
Yeah.
And then in the summer, we throw him into Love Island. And by the end of that process... We've hit all the key demographics that we need to hit, and then we put him on Talk Sport for about 1/6 of the income.
Yeah.
Perfect.
All he needs to do is give up his Lions, his international career, then his dignity going on to Strictly, and then his family, because you need to be single to get onto Love Island.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say his wife and four kids.
Yeah.
He's got to give up.
That's all he needs to do to give up to get, you know, a very bit part insecure job.
But by the way, how much would you love to see, you know how the lads do those workouts with the dumbbells in the gym, how much would you love to see them doing it next to Courtney? Courtney would do proper weights.
Don't even bother with
it. Not beach bicep curls. He'd go there and do deadlifts and...
real weights.
And back squats, deep back squats.
Or just not bother. What's there to prove? That would be my plan. I see what you're saying. You need the names. We don't need all the names.
So when 8.5 million people turn on the telly, it does make a difference. And actually going, that's Johnny Wilkinson. I want to hear what he's got to say. Versus, and I totally take your point, you want that knowledge. And so there's no excuse there's no excuse for not being able to appeal to both the highly, highly hungry rugby fan who wants all the intricacies and also the casual.
I'd love to see Austin Healey do Six Nations.
I totally agree.
Genuinely love to.
He's done Strictly Come Dancing.
He's done Strictly Come Dancing. There we go. He can do your rugby show.
I actually agree. I think he is woefully underused. He's not used at all outside.
I'm not sure he's that bothered. Actually,
no, I don't think he's bothered. He's independently wealthy and doesn't really give a damn.
No. And Haskell. Haskell's the other one who's got so much to say and so much worldly experience. He's one of the few, actually, who could probably give you an insight into, you know, the New Zealand system, the French system, the Japanese system.
He was on I'm a Celebrity.
He's on I'm a Celebrity. You know, all the important things.
MMA.
You name it. That boy can talk about
it. See him in OK Magazine with his missus.
Got a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, written a book.
There we go. I mean, why they don't use these people, I do not know. Why I have...
I share your frustration because just listening to the two post match pundits, I really like Warburton.
Yeah,
I
think Warburton
always adds value and adds insight. Martin Johnson, I get no benefit from listening to him whatsoever.
And I've no problem if Martin Johnson wants to take it seriously. I mean, I would love to hear his knowledge paired up to his efforts on the sidelines every week at Premiership games and doing all the hard yards. I would love that. But if he's not going to do it, I don't want to hear him. Simple as that.
Or, and I don't want to, it's sometimes you don't want to hear like Clive Woodward just go, oh, this is how I remember it when we won the World Cup. That's, you don't always want to hear that. But at the very least, if you are there, I want to hear you relate it to your experiences. And quite often, the problem some of these players do, they have all this knowledge that they can draw upon and they never use it. They just spit out cliches.
Someone said on Twitter, which made me laugh quite a lot, I would love to give broadcast journalism a go if only I could put up with the abuse. And I thought, that's a very peculiar way to look at things, isn't it? Because that assumes that you're instantly good enough. And it's also quite insulting because it doesn't actually tell you any of the effort which these people put into getting there. So if you want to be a presenter, I think presenter is probably the most competitive job in all of rugby, because you don't necessarily need to be a rugby player to do it. There are about 5 gigs in the entire country. There's even less during the Six Nations. And you've got to do it for about a decade. The thought that the only thing stopping you doing it is you, or you'd be on the Six Nations, is absolutely ludicrous.
Well, whoever that person is, I would just love...
Just give them a microphone. There you go.
I'd love to tell them in detail. I'd love them to just ask me, how did you end up doing what you're doing? And I'll bloody tell you. I've done a podcast for 7 years, every single Sunday, even when we've had members of the team in hospital, we've had babies, we've been away on honeymoons.
It never occurs to people that they just might not be good enough to do this job. I know it's really hard because I have tried it. I got someone, a professional cameraman, to film me doing a 2-minute thing and then a showreel, and then Sale Shocks TV were kind enough to put me on TV on their broadcast. I was bloody horrendous. So the fact that you think you can just do it, it's embarrassing. Just don't tweet that nonsense unless you can do it. Or go get yourself a camera, go down to United or any ground and do some sort of vox pop for free, build your own showreel and send it in, and you still might not be good enough. It's hard.
So shall we segue across to Italy, France, unless you've got anything else to touch on.
I literally have
Wales
nothing
Island.
To say about this game.
Hugo Keenan, loved Hugo Keenan. I thought he was, he looked really good, and that's been a problem position for Ireland. What with Crichton, you weren't sure totally whether he's going to be the long term answer of 15 for Ireland, and Jordan Lama, you have worries about him defensively.
The funny thing about Crichton is, I thought you were referring to Tadburn then. Not Tadburn. Tadd Furlong. Yeah.
No.
He's got Crichton head too.
Stockers. Really, really liked Hugo Keenan. And
had a good game.
I thought Ireland actually did a lot of really good things. Their front row coming off the bench, they've got 6 just ferocious front row players. And I think Hendo needs to get a bit more game time.
I thought Henshaw was good, actually. He had a lot of nice little touches.
Made some errors.
Henshaw was good.
But he was good, yeah. He was good. So anyway, I think there's enough there to feel positive if you're an Ireland fan. Peter O'Mahony made a silly decision. Definite red card. Billy Burns, poor bugger. I just wonder if he was just being kind to Freddie and just going, I tell you what, you've had enough stick about that try against Toulouse. I'll take the heat off.
It was so heartbreaking, wasn't it, that moment? It was so heartbreaking.
Did either of you see Johnny Sexton's comments about it?
He said, what did he say? He said, fly halves, at that stage of the game, you have to go for it. No hard feelings. Can happen to any of us, basically.
Oh, he didn't say, I thought he might have said something like, if you take a shot at the champ, you better not miss. That kind of thing. Don't take my shirt again, punk.
Yeah, it was closer to what Tim said. disappointingly. Yeah, he totally backed him, totally backed the decision, and said, look, kind of what you said, Tim, but as when you're a 10, you can be a hero one week and you can be the villain and cost the game the next week, and that's the you got to ride with it.
Do you know what the advantage of a red card is? And this is not even a joke. This is something I thought of watching the game. Is you have a very unusual opportunity to change the complexion of a game from your bench. So Ireland went for the longest time, didn't they, with 7 forwards because you want to keep your back line.
And Henshaw as an auxiliary flanker.
Yeah, but actually, 5 minutes to go, going for the corner, maybe that last play, why not make the substitution to get your last forward on in place of a back? Like, I just thought that's a relatively unusual situation that you find yourself in. In fact, why not take it a step further, which is if you are chasing the game and you've got a kick to the corner and you've got something spare on your bench, even though people tend to empty their benches fairly quickly, throw on the extra forward anyway.
Anyway.
Just throw him on.
That's never happened. That's interesting, actually.
But why wouldn't you?
Eddie Jones talking about his hybrid players.
Yeah. So defensively, Ben Earl could go out and defend on the wing, or Sam Simmons would be amazing for this. But then you're a ninth forward when you want to keep it tight.
I tell you why you wouldn't do it. Because if you're chasing a game anyway, you're emptying your bench. That's the only thing I can think of. Like, you're so desperate for anything to change in your favour, you're going to empty that bench. There's no way you're going to have anyone left.
And also, you're only giving yourself... Well, you're narrowing your options to win because...
Blood subs, that's how you do it.
Mm.
I don't know if it's been tried before, but like a little razor, a little nick.
Capsule from a...
Yeah, like on the inside of the...
Capsule inside the mouth, someone should think of that.
Yeah.
I think there was enough for Ireland to feel positive about. Wales, I think, should feel happy, and Welsh fans should feel happy at the win and the manner of the victory as well. It's not perfect, but I think there's enough to feel good about. I think Phil's point about the injuries... and the toll it might take on a thin squad is a good one.
Yeah, that will be tough.
Yeah.
We mentioned hybrid players there and backs playing in the forward or forwards playing in the backs. I can't believe we're probably an hour into the podcast now and we've not mentioned it up to this point.
Yeah.
Johnny May packed down at number eight.
Number eight.
Yeah, tight head eight.
Love amazing. Amazing scenes from Johnny May. He was pushing down on his locks, I felt. Did you feel that?
Did that scrum ever complete? Was the one where there was free kicks, re-scrum, penalty?
First time it collapsed. So if you've never played eight before, you can push down on your locks thinking you're pushing forward.
You have to get under the crease of their ass cheeks.
Yeah. It's not. I mean, it's very straightforward, but it's not straight. It's only straightforward if you know it's straightforward.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's good that even when, you know, England were playing really badly and in very difficult conditions, the squad were and Eddie Jones were able to just take the piss and have a laugh, just for jokes, because that's the only reason that would have been done is for jokes, not for no functional reason, just for the crack
bants.
So yes,
Italy, France.
Well, the joke would have been to say, we need to have a conversation about whether we need six teams in this competition and should we actually remove a team that's so poor by comparison to the others, relegate England. But still, that conversation around Italy just will not go away.
Yeah.
I mean, what's his face? Who's the coach again? I've just brain farted his name.
Franco Smith.
Yeah. Franco Smith has just had an absolute shocker thinking you can go into Six Nations with... kids.
Yeah, it's not... I mean, to be honest, I don't have anything to say about this. I was watching Harlequin's Bath and I was watching something else. I watched London Irish Gloucester, I watched Wasps, and I watched Harlequins all at different points. So I was busy watching, as dual screening, Wasps and Bath. And then the France game was on in front of me.
Wasps lost to Saints is the game. We'll get into that in our other podcast.
Yeah, Wasp Saints.
And Bath Quins.
Bath Quins was the other one, yeah. So then the big TV did have France on it, but I just didn't see a single thing which happened.
If we talk positives for Italy, they had some nice moments. Brex, their Italian-born centre, looked great, actually.
Italy's Italian-born centre? Do you mean to say that?
I don't believe Italy's... they exist, do they?
Sorry, Argentine-born centre.
Ah, right, I was going to say, okay.
Apologies, yeah. Brex, he looked great. Varney had some nice touches, including a disallowed try, which was, I think it was a little bit harsh. He didn't score. Juani scored it, Monty Juani, who looks magnificent.
He looks great.
He scored it. He looks magnificent. He finished that try quite well. He's an incredible looking chap. Other than that, they were considerably the worst team. France kind of cut them open at will.
Yeah.
Beat them up front, and just that French back line is unreal.
So
Teddy Thomas, Ficou and Vincent in the centre, superb. Yeah. Doulin and Villiers, the small Toulon winger.
I like that kid.
And then the half-back combo. Mm. Jalibert did everything he needed to do, which is let the boys outside in play. And Anton Dupont just finds himself in the right place every single time.
Yeah.
He's just, the way he reads the game is like no one else. He's amazing. So, yeah,
I mean, people talk about his rugby brain. I just want to talk about his actual head, because his brain must be enormous. His head is just enormous.
He's the perfect rugby player as well for the new laws.
Yeah, exactly. That's such a head.
Short, enormous head. 80% head.
You're right. You're right. No, France are so good. Italy actually did a lot of good things. They just did. And this is why, not trying to bring everything back to England, but just mentioning why I could understand England kicking it in a lot of situations. Italy were just running into a brick wall, phase after phase, for minutes on end in their own half. Then losing the ball and France just score. It was really naive. A lot of naive play.
I haven't seen this. But if you've finished, I do have a few things that I would like to say about other things.
Other things?
Uh-huh.
Related to Six Nations and stuff?
Absolutely related to Six Nations. Oh, go on. So, first of all, I know what you're thinking. Congratulations to Lee Need. Well done, you. And also congratulations to Adam Coates, although Adam, sadly, came second to Lee. You will both be getting Negronis from our Negroni League. So
amazing.
Those are the winners of this week's...
Whoa. I just want to make sure. Is Adam Coates only getting the Negroni because his name begins with a letter in the alphabet before someone else? Should we maybe flip a coin for him and the other people on the same number of points?
That's a good point.
If he's only there on...
No, because obviously his parents assumed one day he would be in the Negroni League. These things matter. AAA rat catching.
Wait, let's check this
in the old Yellow Pages.
So this is one of go on.
He is one of four who finished on 48 points,
and it is done alphabetically.
Oh, it is,
because Adam Coates is ahead of Matt Grindrod, who is ahead of Gareth Jones, who is ahead of Gareth Williams. A lot of Welsh people came quite high in our Match Pint prediction league,
didn't they?
Predicting a Wales win and no doubt predicting an England defeat.
All right, so we know Lee Need is either going to drink a Negroni or send it to someone he hates.
Yes.
So that is. So what are we going to do about this four way?
This four way, we could just. How do we pick a number between one and four?
I can do an Excel random number generator.
Of course you can, Phil.
Of course, yes.
As Phil is just getting that set up, let me remind you that on the Matchpint app, you can find the Matchpint Prediction League. Our league is called Egg Chasers. There are hundreds and hundreds of people that have joined us, and a great many of them are better at predicting than Phil and I. JB, I'm very disappointed you haven't, it's our podcast and I think you even engineered a tweet that went out at the weekend which said, think you're better at predicting matches than JB, and you haven't even predicted this week.
Well, if I had a play this week, I'd have scored 58 points, which is incredible, because obviously Lee got 57.
I was in 44th position in ours, because I did predict a Wales win.
Oh, did you? Well, then yes. I would not have predicted that, to be fair. I'm just not a real big fan of fantasy sports, not whilst my... Okay. Tom Wood, this weekend, did an amazing bit of rowing. An incredible bit of rowing. I can't remember what his splits are, but go on Twitter and he's got his pictures up.
It's a Stephen Ferris-inspired rowing challenge, which involves rowing 750 metres, 2-minute rest, 250 metres, 2 minute rest, 500 metres, 2 minute rest, 750 metres, 2 minute rest, and finish off with 1,000 metres. And it's the total time spent rowing. And basically, you are absolutely amazing if you get sub 11 minutes. Tom Wood did it in 10 minutes, 8 seconds, which is ridiculous. His split time, if you've ever been on a Concept 2 rower, his split time over the 3,250 metres was around about 1:30.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Just over 1:30. It's amazing.
Now, I am very happy for Tom Wood to do that rowing challenge. In fact, he has my full backing. But if Northampton would have lost on Saturday, I would have been furious. And frankly, as long as my fantasy rugby team are 0-8, I have no business doing other fantasy activities. So I will be working primarily on getting my first win, and then you might see me in the Negroni League. But until then, I don't deserve it.
Your fancy rugby draft team is in a bad way.
Oh, my word. It's embarrassing.
Right. So we've got four gentlemen. I've got my little random number generator set up.
Yeah.
So if it comes out at number one, it's going to be Adam Coates.
Yeah.
If it comes out at number two, it's going to be Matt Grindrod.
Christ, this is tense.
Number three is Gareth Jones. Uh-oh. And number four is Gareth Williams. Drum roll, please,
Tim. You're the...
No, I can't. No.
Okay. No drum roll. It is number two, Matt Grindrod.
Grindy. Well done, Grinders.
The big grinder.
Yep. Now, talking about random things, this is very random. Let's see if you can guess it. So, during our Scotland-England chat, I went on my favourite app. This is not a paid promotion.
Speaking of Grindr.
Ultimate Rugby, because I do enjoy the app.
Do you know that's BOD? That's BODs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's very useful.
Yeah.
So I don't have the international team set up for whatever reason. So I was fiddling around and I found a search function and I typed in Scotland. What do you think would be the first most prominent result for teams called Scotland?
Scotland men's Six Nations side against England.
That is exactly what I would have thought. Would you like to guess what results Ultimate Rugby has given me to look at? And I'm going to look at every one of them, by the way.
Is it the Super Sixes, as it's now called?
Good question. I think it's been a Super Six.
It'll be like Melrose v Hoyk.
Yeah. So I've just searched for teams. I put in Scotland. And the first result is North Police Scotland RFC. So I'd like to big shout out to North Police Scotland RFC. Police Scotland-Glasgow RFC. So big shout out to those boys. Royal Bank of Scotland RFC. And lastly, all of the West of Scotland have one rugby football club. So there you go.
Wow.
Follow them on Twitter, you can do anything. But no Scottish national team.
I wonder if the Met Police is still what league they're in. Because I can remember, and it might have been the amateur days. No, it must have been league days. So I was playing for Newbury. I'm pretty sure we played, it might have been the second team perhaps, but we played against Met Police.
Who the hell are
they? Were
Wales?
Good.
So for Wales, it's North Wales Exiles, which I guess is English people in Wales.
Yeah.
Wales High School. Who the hell are they? Let's have a look.
Wales High School. It's going to be like, it'll be a TV
at,
show.
At no, account suspended on Twitter. So Wales High School, avoid them.
Okay.
And then Wales under 18s.
Okay. So come on, Ultimate Road. Come on, BOD. Get it sorted.
I think so they need some algorithmic changes there.
Yeah. Have you got anything more else for your any other business thing?
No, that was it. Sorry.
I did like this little tweet that I saw, which said... As much as it was great to watch the rugby, it was very evident that the lack of crowd really did lose a certain something. And I was looking at... I wonder if it's still on my YouTube and I'll just play a little snippet of it and you get a sense of it. I don't know how I got into this, but I was watching when Elliot Daly scored that try against Wales a few years ago in the last couple of minutes. And England won. And it just the noise of it... Hold on a minute.
I watched that in Berlin. It was awesome.
Download
a free
audio. Oh, flipping it. 30-day trial. Sorry, that's the advert.
Is this on YouTube?
Yeah. Hold on.
Why don't you pay for premium, Tim? Why? The biggest roar
of the day. Just listen to this crowd when Daly scores. Some stage they're going to...
Elliot Daly just chases him down. Elliot Daly!
Just when you hear that crowd, you realise how, particularly that Wales Island game in Cardiff, the noise that would have been being made in those last few minutes would have been off the scale.
Do you think the noise would have been, it'd be almost like a groan, that, because the Elliot Daly Cuthbert chase, I mean, I'm just thinking about it now. You've raised my heartbeat a little bit there, because you just, it was such a tight thing.
Wales were 16-14 up with 2 minutes to go.
Whereas the Billy Burns kick would have just been a huge deflation. Like, oh, thank God that's over.
Yeah.
Thank God that's over.
But the noise as Wales were defending would have just been ridiculous. No, but the point I raised it is because there was a tweet that I saw which was quite funny, which was about how to recreate the Twickenham corporate experience at home. One, get drunk before 11 a.m.
Yes.
Two, eat Hunter's chicken. Three, bellow the national anthem. Four, tell the dog, it's on. Five, watch the first half intermittently. Six, miss the entire second half. And seven, walk around outside very drunk for 4 hours.
Yep. On being very drunk, and we've had 3 or 4 emails this week into contacteggchasers@gmail.com, which is now turned into basically a strong Lemon Zero support group. There's no other way. There's no other way to describe the messages that we're getting in.
Brilliant. Well, we'll share those on a podcast very soon. Great.
Next week's games.
Then.
Let me get it up.
I love how we automatically just go next week's games. Come on, then, Phil.
Yeah. Well, we all have our jobs now, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so Saturday the 13th, we have England hosting Italy. Want to get back on the horse. That's at 2:15.
What do you do for this?
Yeah, what do you do? Or what Eddie Jones will do, I think, is pick almost the entire same team.
Yes.
I do have more
of the same.
I do have some sympathy with that, in as much as it would be quite... In players that had a very disappointing game, like Billy Vunipola, for example, it would be disappointing to just sort of withdraw them and not give them an opportunity to put it right. I would like to see some changes, though. I want to see Max Malins at fullback.
So the way, go on, Phil.
Who would you lose, Tim, if Malins goes to fullback?
I would probably would I lose Anthony Watson? Yeah, Anthony Watson just for this game. And I might, or no, maybe Daly just for this game. I'm just thinking, okay, I'd lose Anthony Watson for this game. Because I want to see
forever.
Malins at fullback.
Maybe forever.
Maybe.
As Brett Favre said, don't give anyone else your shirt. Ever.
And I would, and personally, I would actually, not because he had a bad game, but just because this is the perfect time to play, I'd play George Ford so he's ready to go, and I'd play the same two centres so they have the chance to get the ball, and I'd start Dan Robson and have Harry Randall on the bench, and I wouldn't change a lot in the forwards except Jack Willis in for Mark Wilson.
That's harsh.
No, it's not because I think Mark Wilson was bad, I'm just saying this is the game to try things
and experiment.
This is the game if you wanted to try and develop your attacking play, then that's why I'm saying Jack Willis adds a certain something, Dan Robson adds a certain something, George Ford adds a certain something, Max Malins adds a certain something. So get those guys in just to try it, because you can go back to whatever team you want to pick the next week anyway.
I have three thoughts. What Eddie would have done if he'd have won this weekend, what I think he will do, and then what I would do. All of which are completely different. So I think if he'd won this weekend, everything would be right and rosy, and he'd have the excuse to play players who he needs to get capped, or he needs to see some of, or he can be a little bit more generous with his playing time. As it happens, I would suggest that one of his major weaknesses the week just gone against Scotland was some of his team were undercooked, particularly the Saracens lads. You cannot not take this opportunity to get them more game time because it's so rare for them. They've got to play.
I'll add two more. I would actually have Jamie George on the bench, start Luke Cowan-Dickie, and I'd start Harry Williams at tight head. But sorry, go on.
Yeah, and Harry Williams could then actually kick on for the rest of the tournament. So I can see that one. So that's what I think he'll do. I think changing the team from his point of view would be going away from the core tenets of what he believes and how he wants to play the game and the strategies that he's put in and yada, 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 yada. He, in effect, has to play a very similar team, I believe. What I would do is I would get rid of Farrell. I would get rid of Watson. I would bring in Laws. I would probably get rid of Daly. And
so Laws for Farrell, was that?
Laws for Farrell, yeah. Farrell okay. at 10. So, Laws at 10.
Just to be very clear on this, this is not what I was intending, but if that was my binary choice, Laws or Farrell, for any shirt, I would pick Laws, yes. But that's not what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of... I think Ford allows you to get the best out of the two centres, who I think are superb, and if you treat them right, I think we've got a centre partnership for a long, long time. And then... I think Itoje... Oh, and Billy Muscoto. So Itoje onto the flank, Tom Curry somewhere, and then Willis somewhere. You can mix up those two as you like. Keep Hill and then partner him with Laws. I love that back five. I think that back five is absolutely lethal. If Billy shows himself to be... Well, the thing is, he can't show himself to be fit, can he? He can't play his way back into form.
It's kind of what I said. Like either you say those Saracens players aren't playing until next year, or you play them this weekend.
Yeah, it has to be individual, I think. Look, Maitland did fine, but if you haven't done fine, you're going to get dropped. You're going to find it very hard to get in, and if you find it hard to get into the Six Nations team, you may as well kiss the Lions goodbye. That's how serious they find themselves in. Situation they found themselves in. It was a gamble for those players to stay at Saracens, and it could have paid off, and it might not.
I'd refer to my earlier conversations on correlation and causation. Phil, what would you do?
So what I want to see is England have some attacking strategy that is not predicated on beating the opposition up.
Yes.
So first phase attacking ball where they can secure clean ball and they're not using big runners to hopefully get win the game line battle and create quicker ball for space outside. I want to see that. But I'd keep most of the team the same because they're talented players. They just didn't play well in this game for one reason or another, some of which might be undercooked, some of which might be the conditions, some of which might be just they had a bad game, exactly as you said before, Tim. Good players have bad games from time to time.
Mm-hmm. That's true. What must Marcus Smith think?
There's a long list. What must Joe Simmons think?
Yeah, it seems right. Like those two are the Ford and Farrell of the future, it would seem to me.
Yeah, I don't think either of them would begrudge being.
I hope they would
being behind. Well, no, I'm.
I hope they'd be fighting tooth and nail.
I don't think either of them would begrudge being behind George Ford.
I would, if I was that way inclined. If I was that competitive, I'd bloody.
Okay. They'd like to be in the squad, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
What you're actually saying is one England, an England fly half who is still relatively young. Extremely proficient, like exceptional, and is proving that and has played rugby this season. So all of the reasons why you wouldn't pick Farrell is George Ford, who isn't even starting 10.
It's sort of like saying, I think Dan Bigger would be happy being second fiddle.
I'm not saying happy. I said begrudge.
To Hawk and Henson.
I said begrudge.
All he wanted to do is destroy their lives. For the 4 years that he's with them, just destroy their lives.
I said begrudge. They would understand that they wouldn't say they are being... mistreated by George Ford being above them.
Marcus Smith is a bionic Terminator that takes everything as a slight.
you're thinking of Danny Cipriani.
friend of the pod, Steve Parrott, just and along your line with attacking players and not changing too much and stuff, it just reminded me, friend of the pod, Steve Parrott, who is also the voice of Exeter Chiefs on Twitter during their match days. He said when he signed off last night on Twitter, he just said, final rugby tweet tonight. He's an Exeter fan. He said, Henry Slade is one of the most naturally talented English players I have had the pleasure to watch. To see him wasted chasing kicks and hitting rucks is criminal. He might as well just come back to the Chiefs thoroughly pissed off.
Ooh.
Mm. Very un-Steve Parrott, but absolutely bang on.
Yeah, those rucks need clearing.
So I really hope we see an attack inside of England.
Now, scoreline predictions?
Millions and ill.
To Italy?
To Italy, of course.
England by 20.
It has to be. It has to be England by at least 20. I think they will do. The problem is I don't think it's going to be a great test for England because Italy are, by far the worst team in the tournament. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to learn. They might get a big win, but they're not going to learn anything that's going to be useful for the next few games, and that's a bit frustrating.
Yeah, agreed.
Next game, the big game on Saturday, 4:45, is Scotland v Wales.
It's Scotland. I don't need to think too long about that.
I agree.
I think they will. I think they will back it up. I think it'll be really tight and low-scoring game. I'll go for... It'll be something like... This is what I'll be putting on my match pint predictor. Scotland 18, Wales 12.
I'm going to go for Scotland 35, Wales 26.
35. I can't see it being that high scoring.
Just 45-26, because you said that. Do you want to keep going?
Scotland by... I think Scotland by 4 points and under 30 points in total.
Wow. No, that's ridiculous.
Hear me now, believe me later.
Okay.
And then Valentine's Day.
Yep.
On Sunday.
I'll save that for the other pod, but there's one Valentine's Day related rugby story that I do love getting out every year, which, listen to the midweek domestic podcast for that. I'll remember to mention that one.
Mm-hmm.
And the game is Ireland in Dublin hosting France.
This is it, isn't it? This is the Grand Slam one for France. It's not for Ireland, of course. France win this and they kick on for the Grand Slam, I'm sure of it.
If Ireland lose this, they kick on for the wooden spoon.
Yeah.
If Ireland lose this, the questions have to be asked.
I think Ireland will lose this. I think France are so dangerous. Ireland are a good team to try and shut them down because they've got a very good pack that can match France in most aspects, and they've got a very well-drilled, very organised defence.
Mm.
But give me France by 8 points.
I absolutely loved the package that Gabriel Clark put together on Fabien Galthié in the build-up to France.
Yeah,
it's great.
I really, really enjoyed that. And I didn't have an awareness of like that darker side of him.
Yeah.
And listening to Benjamin Benjamin Kaiser.
Benjamin Kaiser.
Talking about like the kind of dark side of a genius. I really enjoyed that little piece. Superb.
It was excellent. And yeah, it got a real insight into Galthié, who seems to be a maverick, a real good thinker, but he has matured and grown as a man.
You say dark side? What are we talking about here? Like drowning hamsters or?
He fell out with his Stade Francais coach because basically he was uncoachable. As a player, he was not uncoachable, but
I know the feeling.
As a player, he was almost uncoachable because he was so precociously good. He thought he knew best and wouldn't listen. And in his early days as a coach, he would do it all on his own because he knew best and only his way.
So
he's a very, very confident human being, extremely confident, bordering on arrogant in a good way, but he appears to have mellowed, realised his limitations and sought help to plug gaps, for example Sean Edwards.
Yeah, that was really interesting hearing Kayser talking about Sean Edwards coming in and the balance and how Galthié never would have done that 5 years ago or 10 years ago. But he thinks it's a perfect fit for the two of them,
and he's got a great pair of glasses.
Yes, he does.
He's got a big pair of glasses.
He's got a signature pair of glasses.
Yeah, they're distinctive.
They are very distinctive. He's a cool bloke. He manages to pull off plimsolls with a suit. I'm not convinced, but he almost pulls it off. No, I think he does pull it off.
Yeah, I'll let him get away with it. It's not the kind of look where I'm like, oh yeah, I want to look like that, because I know I could never pull it off. But
whoa, was it Greenwood this week? No, Gareth Thomas.
Gareth Thomas.
That's a disgrace.
Yeah, Gareth Thomas's trousers were incredibly short.
Do you know?
They're almost like three quarter length shorts.
Yeah, we'll discuss this further in the midweek domestic podcast.
Okay.
But, you know,
I'll make a note of that.
I'm not necessarily over enthralled by the winter getup of the Premiership comms teams. I think they need to be a bit smarter. They all are dressed like they're on a winter commute on the tube somewhere. That's basically how everyone's dressed now. Hats and all sorts of stuff. No, it's not good enough.
Right, I'm making a note of these little points. Oh, and Valentine's story, that's it.
There we go.
I'll remember those for tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow's podcast.
For tomorrow's podcast. There we go. Thank you very much for listening. A reminder, he's at Jay Beardmore. I'm at Cocker on Twitter. We're at Rugby Podcast. Egg Chasers, patreon.com/eggchasers. If you appreciate and would like to support, we were really hoping. And again, we mentioned the lack of crowds and stuff. We can't wait until we can do live shows and stuff again. So your support, much appreciated. Matchpint app to come and take us on. And I'm going to insist that you download it and do your predictions this week, JB. Yes, you do.
What if I win? That's embarrassing for everyone, isn't it?
Well, you can.
I mean, I will.
You can send your Negroni to any fan you choose on that Matchpint app.
I've said it once. I'll say it again. I'm sending mine to.
You're sending yours to. I've forgotten now.
Roundtree.
Oh, Graham Roundtree. Graham Roundtree. Of course.
Oh. I can't believe Graham Roundtree's not downloaded the app yet. If you want that Negroni, download the app, Graham. Get on there.
He's using an alias, Lee Need.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah. So thank you very much for listening. We will have another podcast coming. Hit subscribe and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.